Welcome to The Five, a WMC Action News 5 sports podcast. I'm your host, Sudhu Upadhyaya. Joining me today, my good friend, a fellow WMC Action News 5 money maker, big baller, Chip Williams. Chipper, you like your intro there, man?
Yeah, I like being called a big baller, you know? It's like we're joining the LeVar Ball squad, you know, triple B's.
Well, we've already lost some people listening. But no, it's so great to join you guys or have you join us today for this first ever episode, to my knowledge, of a WMC, the WMC Sports Podcast. I don't think it's ever been done before.
They did radio back in the day, but I don't think, hey, this is the new generation, the new wave.
That's right. We're reviving that that legacy.
Yep.
There's a whole section of our building that's like still, you can tell that radio stations were there. Or like, you know, radio booths were there.
At one point, it was definitely there, but it's not too many people go over there now.
Yeah, hey, enough about that. We're so great to be with you today. It's awesome on this great Friday afternoon. There's a lot to talk about, and we've been trying to do this for quite some time now. Just been trying to reach out to our viewers and just make some listeners out of them, I guess. I know a lot of people are interested in pods, especially sports here in Memphis. I have a big background in doing podcasts before I took the job at WMC. That's a lot of what I did was doing podcasts, and that's what Chip did as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've hosted a podcast. Some may have listened to it before on SB Nation. I wasn't very creative with my name. It was just the Chip Williams podcast. But this is something that I've always been a big fan of doing. And you're right. It's a good way to reach a new audience. And come on, Memphis is a huge sports market. There's always going to be people who want to listen to this. So I'm excited about it, man.
Yeah, there's always room for more Memphis sports talk, which brings us, and this is why we needed to do this. We've been trying to find, when do we launch this? When do we start doing this? And the best time is now, because the Memphis Grizzlies are on a roll right now. I don't know what has happened. Oh, I do know what has happened. They lost a lot. That's what happened. But I don't know what else happened in that front office. But it seems like Chris Wallace has decided that he is done hearing about people criticize him. He is tired of waiting around for people to develop that are pretty much dead weight. No offense to anybody. But, I mean, that's pretty much what it was. And he is starting to make moves this offseason that people across the NBA, like the writers that cover the NBA, other analysts, are actually looking at Memphis and saying, wow, that team could be a night and day difference in 2018 compared to 2017 just because they are out here making moves on the market.
I know they absolutely are. It's you look at what the Grizzlies did the past few off seasons, and you compare it to what they did this off season, it's very much a night and day difference. Chris Wallace has always been one to go for the high upside, but also pretty low floor guys. And a lot of those moves have not panned out in recent years. You look at some of the things that they have done, though, this offseason, it's been correcting a lot of those mistakes. And I know that we'll jump into each individual move, but one thing that I look towards as the shift is the ownership situation is now completely settled. Robert Pera is the controlling owner. Robert Pera bought out the shares from a couple of the minority owners who made an effort to buy the team from him. And we've got that finally squared away. We've got some stability at the top. And I think anytime you as a guy who follows the Spurs, you know this anytime, you've got stability at the top, that trickles down the organization and leads to success.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. Between Buford and Pop, what they've been able to do and what they still may be able to do with Kawhi gone even is kind of crazy. But we're going to continue. Before we continue, let's shout out some socials. Of course, you guys got to follow WMC Action News 5 on Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Sudhu Upadhyaya. I'm the only one on Twitter. If you can't spell it, you'll be able to find me. Chipper, Twitter handle.
Chip Williams Jr., J.R., Chip Williams Jr.
And for the Grizzlies fans, if you don't already follow them, I don't know what you're doing. Follow Chip Williams Jr. It's there's good stuff there. This man does stats like no one else. Like, people get in Twitter arguments, right? Like, people will get in Twitter arguments, and they argue about the things they've seen. They'll be like, so-and-so's better than so-and-so. I watch blah, blah, blah game. And this man shows up out of nowhere. He's like, well, the advanced numbers indicate that so-and-so. I mean, like, it's insane. Do not get in a Twitter battle with this guy unless you've got your statistics right.
There's just so many free available stats to the public. You're crazy if you don't look at what it is. And people like to bash stats, but why would we want to be less smart? Take the available information. You know, but that's what I'm saying. You come at the king, you best not miss.
You know, the other day I saw something. Someone had tweeted about Andrew Luck. And Chip here is a huge Colts fan, so don't ever speak ill of Andrew Luck. Like, I've made that mistake before, and I've had to reconsider my entire knowledge of the NFL because of what I've said about Andrew Luck. But some guy said something about Luck and John Elway, I think. And Chip kind of was like, look at their first 5 years. Luck has blown Elway out of the water in every statistical category. And you should have put this on the tweet, but that's without an offensive line.
Exactly. No, I mean, obviously we're not going to sit here and talk about Andrew Luck. But yeah, this guy basically said, hey, Andrew Luck's supposed to be John Elway coming into the league. He hadn't been that. So I had to end him because he's been way better than John Elway was his first 5 years. So that's what I'm saying. You come at me, you get quality content, and you know what I'm saying. Follow boy, follow Sudu. He's going to drop at least one viral video a month. So you get it's pretty decent Twitter follows.
We try to do it for you guys. We try to do it for the followers. That's all it is. Just trying to inform the public. All right. So moving forward, the Memphis Grizzlies, it all starts with the season ending. We all knew by December probably that this team was tanking, that they were going for a lottery pick, and that's all you had to look forward to. FedEx Forum was not that full the rest of the season. Once Conley was out and Fizdale was fired, it was pretty much, all right, this is going to be a tank season. It's what they did after. That's pretty cool. I mean, the middle of the season, the whole not trading Tyreek Evans and getting some sort of value for him, knowing you probably weren't going to keep him, that was the one move that Chris Wallace made that people were really upset by, but he kind of left them some hope. He was like, well, you know, maybe we keep him. You know, Tyreek likes Memphis. Maybe he'll take, you know, whatever money we offer him and we'll keep him.
Right.
And outside of that, it started with the draft, right? So you draft Jaren Jackson, you draft Javon Carter, both, I mean, as soon as they were drafted, I don't care what the fans thought, but everybody that knew what they were talking about was like, those are two really good picks. And it seemed that at that time, without the Grizzlies really saying it, that they were like, okay, we're going back to grit and grind. We're going back to defense first because both guys were defensive players of the year in their conference. Javon, two years straight. And then Jaren, of course, last year as a freshman in the Big Ten.
Yeah, you look at, in fact, a good guy that I know, Jonathan Charks, he writes for The Ringer now. He's been writing about the draft for a very long time. He recently did an article redrafting the 2018 NBA draft. And listen, we haven't even played a real meaningful NBA game yet. But you look at what Jaren did in summer league, it excited a lot of people. So Jonathan Charks wrote this article, and he redrafted it, and he had Jaren Jackson going number one overall. So there's a lot of excitement right now. It's been a very long time, honestly, since the Grizzlies have had a rookie with this much excitement around him, probably since O.J. Mayo. O.J. Mayo was a really highly touted guy who killed it his rookie year and really fell off the face of the earth after that. Just his best season, you almost never see this, was his rookie year, and then it just declined from there. But Jaren Jackson, man, I mean, he's the youngest guy in the draft. He's not even 19 years old yet. And he's doing things on the defensive end of the floor that you would expect from a guy like Kevin Garnett, a seasoned vet who's basically the quarterback of the defense. And I know that it's hard for just your average viewer to watch that and see that and notice that because there's no quantifiable stat or there's nothing that you can really do to see that. You just have to know what to look for and read articles because there are these people who are pointing it out. There are a lot of very smart people who are really high on Jaren Jackson Jr. I was ecstatic that he fell to four. I had him number two on my board pre-draft behind Luka Doncic, really the only big-time prospect we haven't seen yet. But yeah, there's a lot of hype around Jaren Jackson Jr. right now.
What he was able to do in the summer league was just validated everything people like you thought. People that wanted Jaren Jackson Jr. in Memphis and not the ones that booed him or didn't cheer for him at the Forum. I was there. I know you guys were there, but it's okay. All is forgiven now.
Well, it's understandable. Like, I mean, you see these guys, you see like a Marvin Bagley, you see a DeAndre Ayton, Trae Young, these guys who were stars as freshmen in college. And Jaren Jackson was not a star. I mean, he put up the good stats in the time that he was able to be on the floor, but he had foul troubles. He played with a traditional center, Nick Ward at Michigan State, and that really kind of clogged up the middle for Jaren Jackson. Didn't really allow him to do the things that he is able to do on the court. But you look at the way basketball is played in 2018, bigs have to be able to switch on to guards to defend. They have to be able to stretch the floor to keep everything spaced out. And Jaren Jackson checks both of those boxes at an exceptional level. You go back and look at the way that he defended in college and the way he shot in college. You check out some of those numbers, you start seeing names like Anthony Davis and Joel Embiid are the only guys in that echelon with him. Is he that type of prospect? I don't know. We'll see. He's not far. But I think we need some time to see what he looks like on an actual NBA floor. But there's a lot to be excited about. I understood fans' frustration on the day that he was drafted, just because you can't go look and see, oh, look, our guy averaged 20 and 12 in college. But you look at the things that he did when he was out on the floor, it gave you a lot to be excited about. And thankfully, he was able to show a lot of that in summer league.
Absolutely. And obviously, Jaren's kind of stole the show. Everybody was talking about him, the insane amount of blocks this man had throughout summer league. And of course, his debut was just him dropping trays on Atlanta. Yeah. You know, and that was the night Trae Young, Jaren Jackson, and Trae Young was airballing. Let's be real. That's what was happening. And Jaren Jackson, meanwhile, was just dropping in threes and kind of stole the show. And he started it on a high note. He ended it on a high note. Yep. So that's everything to feel good about in terms of Jaren Jackson. Javon, I'm not going to lie. When the Grizzlies drafted Javon, I was actually like, wow, that's a really smart pick. That's a very smart second round pick, especially if you guys are going to go the way we think you're going to go. I mean, they hadn't quite announced that, you know, we're going to go right back to grit and grind just quite yet. But I think that pick just showed, okay, they're saying that we're going to go to the thing that's helped us win for this many years. The 1 year we moved away from it, the 2 years we moved away from it, didn't really help us.
Right.
You know, Fizdale's first season, they make the playoffs. But, I mean, you know, you get swept by the Spurs, injuries, whatever, you have it. And then the second year, it just didn't work for whatever reason. So the Grizzlies said, we're just going to stick to whatever took us to the playoffs 7 straight years. And I think that's what Javon Carter was. It just said, validated, okay, that's what they're going to do. And Javon, I mean, he showed out as well. I mean, he's not going to go out there and drop 30 points every night or anything like that. But he showed his defensive value as well in the summer league.
Right, and Javon represents a little bit of a shift that we were talking about earlier in the way that Chris Wallace operates. Because you look at some of the picks that Chris has made in the second round, going all the way back to Tony Roten, Josh Selby. Some of these guys who appear to have a high upside, but also a very low floor. And Javon Carter is a shift in that thinking where a pretty high floor, but a limited ceiling for him. He probably is not going to turn out to be a great starting point guard one day. But what Javon Carter is a 10-year veteran who's going to be a really nice point guard for people in the league and a guy who's going to help you win basketball games. And that's really what you want from your bench. You want guys who, when starters need a break, when it's time for them to come off the floor, you want guys who are able to come in and not have that productivity fall off too much. And that's what I think Javon Carter offers, because day one, he's going to walk into the NBA as a plus point guard defender. And that is so, so pivotal for guys getting on the floor in year one. Javon Carter and Jaren Jackson already going to be plus defenders in the NBA, or at least not, they're not going to kill you on defense. And that's what you want from your rookie. They're going to learn. They're going to take their lumps. They're going to have veterans who show them up from time to time. But as long as these guys can be sound on defense, they're going to be able to contribute right away. A few years back, there was an argument as to who the Grizzlies should take, Draymond Green or Tony Roten. And they ended up going with Roten. The high upside point guard who is no longer in the league. And you look at Draymond Green. Now he's an all-star. He's won multiple titles with the Golden State Warriors. I don't have to tell you who Draymond Green is. And I think that if Wallace had applied the logic that he used for this draft back then, you may have Draymond Green on your roster. You can't harp on the Grizzlies' draft record. It speaks for itself. But what they've done this draft, I think, shows a shift, a fundamental shift in organization philosophy and what they want to do going forward. Exactly like you mentioned, I think that's why they brought J.B. Bickerstaff, is to continue that defensive identity that they'd had success with for so many years.
So, obviously, you get those two guys, but then in the middle of all of that, Tyreke Evans, who I think the whole city of Memphis obviously loved from his Tiger days, and then he comes in and just, I mean, kills it, man. And his one season, it's like this is his opportunity to get his big contract. And it just so happened to be the year the Grizzlies tanked. Mm-hmm. But in any other situation, I think Tyreke Evans would have gotten paid a lot more than he did. You know what I mean? Yeah. He went off. They couldn't get any value for him, the value that they wanted in the middle of the season during the trade deadline. And, you know, they offered him something, but, you know, they just couldn't break the bank on Tyreek Evans. It just wasn't, they weren't able to in terms of the money they had, the contracts and everything they were tied up in. And he walks and goes to Indiana, and people were upset, you know?
Justifiably so, right. I think. You know, I think that it's not, because I think what you could have gotten for Tyreek is maybe something like 2 seconds and a contract filler for him. Not the greatest haul ever, but I think what it is, it's more of, hey, we had an asset, we turned a minimum contract into a really nice player, and then let him walk for nothing. And I think that it's more the thinking of, hey, we didn't do a very good job managing the asset that we had, as opposed to, man, what could we have gotten for Tyreek? You know, it sucks that he left and you got nothing for him. But you just want to see your organization do a good job managing the assets they have. And they kind of fell backwards into Tyreek a little bit. They gave him the 1-year prove-it contract, and he played at a near all-star level. So it was frustrating that he left, but honestly, I don't think people even think about it because of the things that they have done this offseason to replace him and continue to build the roster. Because for so many years, it was Mike and Mark and you know, Zach and Tony. And then how do you find the pieces around those guys? And I think they're doing a much better job this year of finding the pieces that fit with these guys to make a playoff push. Because that's what Robert Parris said. He wants to win 50 games. He wants to go to the playoffs. Is that realistic? I think we'll find out pretty early on in the season. But that's what they're trying to do this offseason.
So Tyreek leaves. Then it kind of starts from there. We get word that Omri Caspi is signed with the Grizzlies, right? Then after that, it's okay. Omri Caspi, you know, not the most exciting pickup in the world, like, right? Let's be real. When I'm saying that he's not going to make an impact with the Grizzlies, he's not going to contribute next year. But it's not as exciting as a Kyle Anderson.
Right.
You know, that's when people started saying, okay, wow, Memphis is really making, like, smart moves, is bringing in Kyle Anderson. So, Chip, obviously you get Omri, you get Kyle in now. Now you're starting to say, okay, now they're actually getting pieces to build around these draft picks and a healthy Mike, hopefully. You know, Mark's going to be back. This is looking good at this point.
Yeah, it is. You know, Omri Caspi and Kyle Anderson are not going to, you're not going to have a whole lot of people replying to Woj's tweet and saying Woj bomb. It's not the biggest, you know, free agent move ever, right? But it is guys who will help you win basketball games. It's the same thing. These guys are high floor guys. These guys are not going to be bad basketball players. They have established that they are solid NBA players in the league. And I know that that sounds like a silly baseline to judge your free agent moves off of, but the Grizzlies have made some questionable ones, whether it be in the draft or in free agency. But you look at a guy like Omri Caspi, like you said, he's not going to start and he's not necessarily going to play a hefty minutes, but he has shown that he can play in the playoffs. He has shown that he can play for winning teams. He can shoot a little bit. He can create a little bit. He's versatile. And that's what you need on a team like that. And then Kyle Anderson, I mean, you watch this guy closely for his entire career. You know what he brings. He's not going to be the best jump shooter ever. He does shoot a good percentage from corner threes when he gets them, but he creates for others. He can defend his position very well. He's slow. It's something.
He's slow-mo.
And I think it's something. Look, Memphis fans, they like quirky stuff. They like Tony Allen. They like Zach Randolph. They like these guys who've got a little bit of personality, but don't necessarily play the way that everyone thinks needs to be played in the way that NBA is. Because Memphis is, it's a little bit of a quirky town. We do things a little bit differently. And Kyle Anderson, I think, is going to fit so well. I think the fans are really going to like him. And he's proven that he is a really good NBA player. Some of these advanced stats that you can find on Kyle Anderson, you don't see for other guys. I'm not sitting here and saying that, you know, they just signed an all-star. I don't think that at all. I think that they sign a good basketball player who's going to help them win games, and he takes a little bit of pressure off of Mike Conley because he can handle the ball. He played point guard all in AAU and kind of growing up, and then obviously being 6'9", he was transitioned into the wing. But that's something that he helps with a lot, and that's what I think they thought they were getting with Chandler Parsons. And obviously Parsons hadn't been healthy, but Kyle can do it.
Very versatile.
Yes.
Extremely versatile guy. And it's funny, when he was first coming up, I read an interview with his dad, who's a high school coach, mm-hmm. I think in like New Jersey or something. And he talks about how he made Kyle into the type of player that back then didn't really exist, but he kind of saw the way the game was moving and was like, you need to be a very versatile forward. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to make you. And that's what he is, man. He's super versatile. He can do it all. The thing about Kyle, you mentioned, you know, some corner threes or something like that. Watching him with the Spurs, the biggest things I will say about Kyle is I feel like when Kyle's comfortable in a game, when Kyle's feeling himself, dude, he is money. Right. He is on fire. He's going to do well. He's going to knock down those shots. But I think it all depends on JB saying, you've got the green light, we believe in you, and we trust that those are going to go in. And I think him feeling comfortable, then I think you're going to start seeing another side of his game that hasn't truly even developed yet fully in the NBA level, which is shooting some outside shots. I think some long-range shots are, I think that's coming for him if they can make him feel comfortable. Because sometimes I feel like he feels like, oh, this is too big for me. Mm-hmm. Pass the ball, you know?
Well, I wonder how much of that was the fact that he was playing with the Spurs. And so he wasn't really asked to do that much, yeah. Right? I mean, you watched it.
Absolutely. Well, when he had to step up, like in Kawhi's absence or something, when he's had to step up, and he had games where he went off. I mean, you will see that in his statistics. But that's what I'm saying. When you watch these games individually and you look at some of these moments and you're like, you know, that was Kyle. That was an easy three-pointer for you, man. You could have drained that, but you chose to pass that instead to someone else. In those moments, you feel like, he's just not comfortable. Like, he's not comfortable at that point in his game, or maybe in that game specifically, he's just not feeling it. But then there's other nights where you see him make it, and you go, if you just consistently, you're comfortable, you believe in yourself, and you're hitting these shots, I think that part of the game will come, too. It just, I think, falls on his comfortability,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one thing that I'm not big on comparing NBA players to other NBA players, but just to give people a little bit of a sense of what they might be getting with Kyle Anderson, to me, he reminds me a little bit of Lamar Odom if you took away a lot of Lamar Odom's athleticism. I know that sounds a little bit ridiculous, but they kind of do everything forward. They're really comfortable with the ball in their hands. They're really comfortable pretty much playing anywhere defense. From 1 through 4. Defensively, yep. Yes. So that's a little, not perfect comparison, but something that you're going to get a little bit of that. You're going to get a little bit of what Lamar Odom did for the Lakers back in the day. And that's a guy, Lamar Odom, I mean, if he played in today's NBA, he's a near max player. He'd be perfect. Great. He was a little bit before his time, but that's what I'm saying. Kyle Anderson is really built to play this switchability, positionless basketball, essentially.
So a big pickup there. Then Chris Wallace does something that I didn't think he was going to do, which is give up Deontay Davis. I think everybody wanted Deontay Davis to work here in Memphis. Everybody wanted, because the man is massive. He's huge. And if he was able to put it together in Memphis, he could have been a scary player. You know what I mean? But I don't know what it is about Didi. I don't know what Didi enjoys in life sometimes. I watch him play. We interview him after the game. And in every situation, you're like, Didi, are you fully in this? Like, do you want to do this? Yeah. That was always the vibe I got. I mean, I'm sure he's a great guy, and I'm sure he's got a great personality. But from what I know, from what I've seen on the court and the interviews after the game, just didn't seem like the most interested guy. It's almost like he was like, yeah, I'm this tall. This is why I play basketball, almost.
Yeah, no, you wanted to ask him. And it's not an indictment on Deontay's character at all. It's just, is this something you want to do? Do you enjoy doing this? Because you watch the man play, and he's got the skills to play in the NBA. There's no doubt about it. He's got the physical tools, and he's got some skills that you like out of a traditional five in the modern NBA. But it just didn't come together for him, and it's unfortunate. But at the end of the day, you know, it's a second-round pick, and pretty much all second-round picks are flyers. And Deontay just didn't work out. And now you actually look at that draft where it was Wade Baldwin in the first round and then Rade Zagorac and Deontay Davis in the second round. They have none of those players left. And that was just a couple years ago. And so they ended up trading him and Ben McLemore for Garrett Temple.
Garrett Temple, for those who don't know, it's like one of the most respected guys in the NBA, the VP of the Players Association. Everybody knows the impact he's had in Sacramento in terms of just speaking up for various causes and issues. I think he's definitely has the respect of a lot of guys in the NBA. So first of all, it's a veteran guy that they're bringing in, I think almost to help younger guys and just add another veteran presence. Chip, what do you think he can do on the court for you outside of that?
Well, I think Garrett, number one, the thing that people bring up about him is his defense. Right. The guy is a defensive-minded player who can shoot a little bit. He's actually something that has developed for his game over the course of his career. He ended up shooting 39% a little over 39% from three last year. And that's, it's funny. You used to make a free agent acquisition for the Grizzlies. The first thing is, can shoot. We got to have shooters. We really need guys who can shoot because, like I said, for years they had, you know, the core four guys and we needed to add ancillary pieces around them. And so what Garrett Temple does, brings in a defender, brings in a guy who once again can alleviate that ball handling pressure from Mike Conley. Because I think you can start him at two if that's what you want to do. They have a lot of lineup flexibility, and he provides that. He provides a steady hand. If you bring him in with the second unit, you know you've got a veteran out there who's going to be your coach on the floor. And there's just a lot of things to like about him. Again, it's not a guy that you're signing hoping that this man's going to make an all-star team one day. But he's going to come in and be a nice basketball player, much like Kyle Anderson, much like Omri Caspi, and hopefully one day much like Javon Carter. And it's just kind of the theme here. You get a guy who you know is going to be an NBA player and going to be a good NBA player and actually going to help you win basketball games. Because you look at one of the guys they traded for him, Ben McLemore, it just didn't work. No. Ben was a flyer.
I don't think basketball worked for Ben in general.
That's the thing is we can sit here and we can talk about, I watch Ben play in college and I like that he can jump. I like that he can shoot. I like that. But it just doesn't work.
Raw talent takes you so far. It only takes you so far. Yeah. And with Ben, it was like, do you just, I don't know, like basketball? Like, do you understand basketball at this level? It's kind of what it came down to. Great guy. Awesome personality. He always kept us laughing a lot.
Seemed to really like it here in Memphis,
too. Yeah, he did. But at a certain point, you know, you see guys like this in the NFL and all these, like, you have so much raw athleticism. You know, you can excel in college just based off of that. Yeah. But once you get to the NBA, you have to know the ins and outs. You have to be able to do all these little things. And with Ben, he never was able to put it together. Some games, he'd go off and you'd be like, wow, is this the moment we're seeing Ben McLemore finally put it together? And no, it was not that moment. It never came, and I don't think it will come.
Give a lot of Devo for taking a second chance on Ben McLemore. And we really appreciate
that. Yeah, shout out to the Kings for that one because I feel like the Grizzlies came out as winners out of that trade.
I don't think anyone would argue that. And in fact, the Grizzlies even sent cash to cover Deontay Davis's contract. I mean, you and I could sit here and do 10 podcasts on the Sacramento Kings and would never figure out what exactly they're trying to do. I think they're going into the season with like 8 big men on their roster and they just added. So you feel bad for Deontay in that sense because, if the guy wants to play in the NBA, he can do it. He just needs someone to work with him. But going to Sacramento, I mean, they're just – when's the last time they really developed someone? Because DeMarcus Cousins, he came into the league awesome. They didn't do a whole lot of
and
developing.
He hated it there.
He did.
That was
like
a cancerous environment for DeMarcus Cousins. Yeah. Say what you want about him, but I'm on Boogie's side.
Team Boogie.
Yeah, Team Boogie for sure. All right, so you get Garrett Temple, right? And we're thinking, wow, at this point, this has been a pretty good offseason for the Grizzlies. They're getting guys, surrounding guys on the team that can make an immediate impact. And then you waive Mike Henry, who Mike Henry did some good things last season. You know, you always like to see a guy get an opportunity. But if you're going to be a serious contender moving forward, what does Mike Henry really give you, right? You want something that you can actually, you know, get something out of or develop and make into something that you're kind of molding your team to be. And I think that's what Yuta Watanabe was. You know, the Atlantic 10 Defensive Player of the Year. He's a big guy, you know what I mean? He did some good things on offense as well in the Summer League. So what do you think, Chip? I know some people, I guess, get attached to players, especially guys on the come up like Mike Henry, and you kind of feel bad for them. But this is a good move, bringing in Yuta Watanabe to a two-way deal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the kind of unintended benefits of this is apparently this guy is a superstar in Japan. So you just snipe. The Grizzlies have I don't know if people realize how big their international audience is. And it's really because of the Gasol brothers. It all started with Mark and Powell. They are huge all across Europe. And now adding a guy, Yuta Watanabe, who's a Japanese guy, I believe going to be the second Japanese player ever to play in the NBA, if he does, if the Grizzlies do decide to bring him up and play him in the NBA. I'm sure they will. You remember they had, I believe, the first Iranian player in Hamed Haddadi.
Yep.
Hamed was from Iran, but he became a cult figure here in Memphis, and maybe the same can happen with Yuta. And the thing about it is the guy can really play. I mean, he was a defensive player of the year in his conference, can shoot a little bit, can handle a little bit. It's funny. He's listed as a power forward, most likely. But I've actually heard people bring up, the second time we've heard this name on the podcast, is Lamar Odom, a guy who can handle it a little bit, can really defend, got some athleticism, shoot a little bit, create for himself a little bit. It's going to take some time. He's a project. But that's the great thing about having the Memphis Hustle right down the road. Is you get to work with these guys in your own facility and really develop them. So I like the flyer. I think that it's worth a shot. You know, Mike Henry was a little bit of a higher floor, pretty low ceiling type guy. You kind of know what Mike Henry is. But I think with Utah, there's a lot of untapped potential there where he could, you know, one day down the road possibly be a contributor for you.
Cornering the Japanese market, man.
I love it.
You know, it's funny. They have Marshawn Brooks, who obviously has a huge following in China.
Man, it's a cult legend in China.
Right, and now you got Yuta Watanabe. Yeah. So, you know what? I think the Grizzlies are like, we're going to become an international brand before we win an NBA title, you know?
Well, maybe do both. Maybe become an international brand while winning.
Right? While winning the NBA title. Chris Wallace secretly just is like, I'm tired of you guys criticizing me. Like, this is what I'm going to do. But no, actually, you're right. Utah, he seems like such an intriguing prospect. It's a guy you want on a two-year, two-way contract.
Right.
Because you want to see what he does at the G League level. Because if he puts it together and it actually works out, you then have Javon Carter, the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. You have Jaren Jackson Jr., the Big 10 Defensive Player of the Year. Then you have Yuta Watanabe, the Atlantic 10 Defensive Player of the Year. That's a lot of defense, Chipper.
A lot of defense, yeah.
That's a lot of defense. Those are a lot of block shots and steals, man.
A lot of damage. If you added DJ Stephens to that, which I know Memphis fans would love for that to happen, but I mean, you know, people might not get a shot off the whole time those guys are on the court. But yeah, I love it. I mean, I think that's the identity of the Memphis Grizzlies is defense that leads to offense, and that's what they're going back with.
Yeah. And the latest move to come from the Grizzlies front office is one that touched me personally. My guy, Jarrell Martin. My guy, Jarrell Martin, was given up to Orlando for some cash for Dakari Johnson and the draft rights to Tyler Harvey. Before we continue, let me just say, Jarrell, I know you're listening. And Jarrell's a dear, dear friend of mine. Not personally, but, you know, in the times we have interacted, I felt like there was a connection and I was like, we could be boys.
Yep.
No, on the real though, Jarrell, I covered him in college. I went to Ole Miss, obviously, so I covered a lot of SEC schools, actually doing podcasts like this and covered Jarrell Martin. And I thought Jarrell Martin was going to be the next big thing in the NBA, man. I was like, this guy is so good. He's so raw. Johnny Jones never fully developed him at LSU, but I was like, man, this guy's going to be a beast. He's going to be awesome. And when I got the job in Memphis, I was like, oh my goodness, I get to cover Jarrell Martin. Well, Jarrell Martin, another one of those guys who just didn't do enough. He did better last season. I'd say last season was his best year with the Grizzlies, but it still wasn't enough to secure a spot on this team. And Chip feels a little different about him than I do.
Well, you know, one thing that I can say for Jarrell is he improved every single year. He got a little bit better year in, year out. And, you know, I think unfortunately for him, the development didn't come quick enough because, you know, you start getting in year two, year three, these guys, they want you to contribute. They are ready for you to be a rotation player in the league. And it never quite happened for Jarrell. You know, he had a little injury trouble early on. Jarrell is a guy who has a lot of physical talents, can really play. You know, you put him in a situation in a workout, he's going to look amazing. But sometimes when he gets 5-on-5, just playing basketball, rolling the balls out there, it doesn't always click for him. He's not always in the right spot. He's not always confident in what he's supposed to do. And I think if Jarrell can go somewhere and get a little confidence and really harness the abilities, the natural God-given abilities that he has, you know, he'll be able to be a rotation player in the league. But, you know, it just didn't work out for him in Memphis. You know, they traded it for a guy by the name of Dakari Johnson, who a long time ago, I actually found a tweet from, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago where I said, you know, hey, I'm pretty high on Dakari Johnson. I think the guy could be, you know, maybe a backup center in the league. I still think that. I don't quite know what the plan is for Dakari yet. A lot of people seem to think that they probably cut him just because his salary is about $1 million less than Jarrell, and the Grizzlies are flirting with the tax line. So it's a little bit easier to cut a salary that's about $1.4, $1.5 million than Jarrell's $2.5 million. But, you know, I think if they do decide to keep him, I could see it, you know, let him go play in South Haven for a little bit, kind of continue to develop. He played a little bit for the Thunder this past season. The draft rights to Tyler Harvey, you know, it's is Tyler Harvey ever going to put on a Memphis Grizzly uniform? Probably not. But I think if one thing fans will remember is having draft rights is valuable, because they once traded the draft rights to Giannis Tima, you know, did some maneuvering. Luke Ridnour was involved, and you ended up with Matt Barnes essentially for draft rights. So it doesn't seem like much, but it's an asset you have if a team is just looking to get rid of someone. So once again, is he ever going to play for the Grizz? Probably not. But you picked up another asset. This is that asset management that we were talking about with Tyreek, where you didn't do a very good job of it. Here for Jarrell, you turn him into maybe a guy who's on the end of your bench and another asset you can trade.
Dakari, well, with this, the Grizzlies, I think, went a little like 470,000 under the salary cap and the luxury tax, I believe. So, you know, like you said, they're flirting with the line. They're very close. From everything I've read, it seems like they might cut Dakari as well. Yeah. And what I've heard, I know obviously OKC traded him to Orlando, who then pretty much let him go. They were planning on cutting him anyways.
Right.
They got some value for him. They got Jarrell Martin, and the Grizzlies, and you know, gave up Jarrell Martin's contract as well. So that was pretty good for them as well.
Right. It was a win-win. Yeah. It's a very small move that's really not going to affect a whole lot of wins and losses for next year for either team. But it was a smart move for Orlando. As a guy you weren't going to use anyways, you took a flyer on Jarrell. For Memphis, you got back under that tax line. And one thing, too, that I think that some may have forgotten about, the Grizzlies reportedly signed Shelvin Mack. And I think that this is probably a move to hopefully get them away far enough away from the tax line that you are able to sign the backup point guard in Shelvin Mack. Now, I think what's interesting is that they haven't done it yet. So that leads me to believe that there are probably some more moves coming down the pipe. Most likely smaller moves, but there are likely some moves coming down. Because I believe Woj reported the Shelvin Mack signing 4 or 5 days ago, and we've heard nothing about it since then. There's no announcement from the Grizzlies, nothing. So something's going on. They're not done, Sudhu. They've got some stuff that they're going
to
keep doing.
And that leads me to this. All these moves have happened this offseason. Most of them, or if not all of them, make sense. You see, even Yuta Watanabe, he may never be anything for Memphis, right? But it's still good that they're giving him a chance, because if he is good, it's the potential there, then you're set. You're in a really good position. What do you think happened this offseason? What do you think Chris Wallace's mindset has been? Do you think someone went to him and said, this is it. This is the last strike for you. We need to produce winners. We don't need experimental players. We don't want McDonald's All-Americans that were good in college. What do you think happened for these moves to start happening? Because I think both you and I agree, when Chris Wallace hits, he hits. Mm-hmm. I mean, the man does well. But his misses are just, you know, it's bad. It's on the other end of the spectrum. So what do you think happened this offseason for all these moves to be put together by the Grizzlies and moves that are being lauded throughout the NBA?
Yeah. No, I think number one is the ownership. Just getting that firmed up, the fact that you no longer have Kaplan in the picture, you no longer have the thought of, oh man, is someone going to swoop in and buy the Grizzlies and maybe move them to Seattle, or what's going on? There's a lot of uncertainty there. And I think that now that Robert Pera appears to have made an investment in the city of Memphis, keeping the team here, I think he's ready now to go to his front office as a controlling owner and say, guys, we've got to get this thing right. Last year was a disaster. It was one of the worst years that we've had in the last decade, to be honest with you. So let's make some moves. Let's correct the mistakes that we've made, and let's move on. Now, I guess the question is, who's calling those shots? And that's something that I don't know. I don't know if, you know, Chris Wallace obviously is still employed by the Memphis Grizzlies. His title is still the general manager of the Memphis Grizzlies. But there are a lot of guys in that organization who are close to Robert Pera. A guy like Joe Abadi, who is Robert Pera's personal lawyer. A guy like Chris Makris, who I know has been over the Grizzlies scouting department. There's a lot of voices in there. Ed Stefanski recently left to go to Detroit. You've still got John Hollinger there. I mean, there's a lot of voices in there. So I guess I'm curious to see if someone can dig up what's going on there. Because you are right. This is absolutely not what we're used to seeing year in and year out from the Grizzlies. And if it is Chris, it's him saying, hey, I made a mistake. I signed Ben McLemore. I made the mistake. I drafted Deontay Davis. It's weird for me to call a second round pick a mistake just because they're mostly flyers. But it's taking the guys on your roster that aren't necessarily going to help you win basketball games and turning them into players who, not sexy names, but guys who, when you put them on the floor, they're going to play well. and they're going to help you.
It's almost as if it's, you know, to use a term, moving dead weight at this point.
Of course, yeah.
Guys that you're saying, you just won't be able to do anything within our system. Go somewhere else. Right. You guys are NBA players. Don't get me wrong. Go somewhere else. We're going to start all over. We're going to figure it out our way.
Yeah.
That's what I think this is for the Grizzlies this offseason. What is it going to mean, though, Chip? How is this all going to work? How are all these pieces going to come together and somehow help Memphis in the toughest conference in all of sports next season?
It's a gauntlet, man. There are probably 11 or 12 teams who could make the playoffs in the Western Conference. I think if the Grizzlies were in the East, you'd be talking about them as a top four, top five seed. But unfortunately, they're in the West, and LeBron James, the best player in the East and really the NBA, just moved west and made the Lakers a team who hadn't been making the playoffs the last few years and most likely catapults them right into the playoff spot. And I don't know that anyone really got that much worse either. That's the problem is, you know, San Antonio, they traded Kawhi Leonard, but San Antonio didn't have Kawhi Leonard for most of last season and were still, what seed were they last year? Were they the fourth, fifth,
sixth?
They were
the sixth.
Sixth seed, okay. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying is they lost Kawhi, still did that, and DeMar DeRozan comes in and, you know, he's a perennial all-star, so they're not going to fall off. What does a starting five look like for the Grizzlies? You know, one guy that we haven't touched on this whole podcast is Dylan Brooks. My guess is he's probably in there. It'll look something like Mike Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, Marc Gasol, and then Jaren Jackson is going to be my guess, as they'll probably start him from day one. If not Jaren initially, most likely Jamichael Green. But there's a lot of depth. I think this is the first time in a while where we've been able to look at this roster top to bottom and see depth, even see that the third string guys, if someone goes down, they're ready to step up and play. You know, a guy like Andrew Harrison has proved over the last couple of years that he's been able to stay in the rotation, provide minutes when he's asked to be, provide minutes, stay steady defensively, and just continue to get better and better each year. It'll be interesting. There's a lot of lineup flexibility. Jaren Jackson can play four or five. When Marc Gasol goes off the floor, you've still got a defensive anchor. I don't know. So it's going to be interesting to see what these guys do with the starting five. But I think a lot of times we get a little caught up in what the starting five is going to look like. I'm always interested in who are the last five. Who's going to be the five guys with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter that you're going to put out there to go win the game? And I think they've got some figuring out to do, because there's going to be
Marshawn Brooks, free Marshawn. Spurs, by the way, were seventh seed last year.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Giving them an extra seed there. But you're absolutely right. But if you were looking at the starting lineup, okay, so Conley at point.
Yeah.
Who do you think is at that two spot, though?
My guess is Dylan Brooks. I could see Garrett Temple if they would like to just bring Brooks along slowly year two. But, you know, Brooks, Grizz fans are excited about him. I think he is closer to what he is going to be as an NBA player than maybe most young guys are, just because he's a four-year guy, came in and contributed right away. But I think that's a guy. It's going to be Temple or Brooks.
Not Wayne Selden.
Wayne's got to do it at the NBA level consistently, I think, before he's a star. I love Wayne. I think that Wayne could be a really nice player, but he's got to prove it first.
That's what I'm looking forward to the most this season, is seeing Wayne Selden. You move all these other guys with question marks around. Wayne has proven himself enough to secure a roster spot. I don't even think that's a question.
No, I agree.
The fact that he played summer league this year was, I think, I don't know this for sure, but Wayne didn't seem too happy about playing in summer league this year, just based on his interviews and just the way he, you know, kind of acted, his demeanor. It was almost like he was like, I've proven myself. Like, why am I here?
Though.
Yeah, he did hoop.
Hey, that's summer league Jordan, man. I don't want to hear anything about him. It's Michael Jordan.
You're in Wayne's world, man. It's party time every single time. I'll take that. Now, what about three?
Kyle Anderson. I think you maybe overpaid him very marginal. I mean, very small. But that's what you got to do with these restricted guys. You got to overpay him a little bit. I think he starts. Obviously, Chandler Parsons is going to be in that discussion. We don't know. I mean, at this point, what you say with Chandler every year is, hope he's healthy. If not, we're just going to keep going, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Kyle has got a pretty firm grip on that number three spot.
Jaren at four as a rookie?
Yeah. Him or Jamichael. I don't know what they're going to do to start, but I would say him or Jamichael Green. You kind of know what Jamichael Green is at this point. He's going to be really nice and help you out and play good defense and shoot corner threes. And Jaren has immense potential. So We'll see. I think that is the one I don't feel very good about. I don't have a good feeling whether they go with the kind of the vet now in Jamichael Green or they go with the 19-year-old, soon to be 19-year-old, Jaren Jackson.
I think it could be a situation where they're, you know, splitting minutes pretty evenly early on, because you do want Jaren to get as much experience as possible, because you're hoping that by, you know, the time the season gets to the point where you're really competing, that Jaren's game is fully developed as a rookie and he's a rookie of the year type of candidate at that point. That's what you're hoping for. But yeah, Jamichael gives you that veteran presence. He's been there. He's done good things. And if he stays healthy, then, you know, that's another guy that's going to help you. Five, obviously, the man. Big Spain out here rescuing refugees.
Yeah, Dakari Johnson could written up. I'm just kidding. I have no take on the five. It's going to be Marc Gasol.
That's a pretty solid starting lineup for the Grizzlies. And you add, you said, the what about the other five guys? And that's the most exciting thing. Oh my goodness, there's depth on the bench for the Memphis Grizzlies.
No, there very much is. We talked about him a little bit earlier, but Andrew Harrison, I remember on draft night when the Grizzlies took Andrew Harrison, I tweeted, I don't think Andrew Harrison is an NBA player. I don't understand this. And about, I don't know, maybe a year later, roughly, I wrote a column for SB Nation I was writing for at the time. And the title was Believe in Andrew Harrison. He had completely converted me from this guy has no business being in the league to, hey, I think this guy can be a backup point guard in the NBA. And the great thing about Andrew is he's 6'5". He can play the two. Gives you some lineup flexibility with Garrett Temple and with Javon Carter. You just go down the line here. You're getting Marshawn Brooks is going to be in the mix. And, you know, you got to take Marshawn for what Marshawn is. Marshawn's not going to step in here and be a grit and grind guy. This guy ain't going to go defend.
He's there to shoot the ball.
My man is going to shoot. He's going to come off and be a gunner. And you know what? Marshawn Brooks is going to help you win some basketball games. Is he going to hurt you sometimes? Absolutely. But he's going to come in and do a little bit of what, like, Jamal Crawford's done his whole career in the NBA. And you just keep going down the line. A guy that we haven't talked about is Ivan Rabb. This is going to be an interesting year for him where he's probably going to be asked to play maybe a little five. You don't know what they're doing with Dakari Johnson yet. Jaren Jackson, you're hoping to get that guy, I guess, 25, 30 minutes a game. So you just keep going down the roster, go down, down, down. You feel good about all these guys, putting them on the floor, and they can play basketball. But, I mean, so you look at it, what it's going to boil down to, how many games is Mike Conley playing? How many games is Marc Gasol playing? And then I'll tell you how the Grizzlies season goes.
Yep, you got to have the health. Don't you love talking some NBA in mid-July, man? Late July, honestly.
I talk NBA anytime. So I'm the guy who's streaming Summer League on his honeymoon. All right, that was me. I was in the Dominican Republic on my honeymoon watching Jaren Jackson pop 8 threes in his first game.
Hey, man, that's what you want to see there, right? That was a good little honeymoon gift for you.
It was. No,
seeing some.
Listen, I planted my flag in the ground for Jaren Jackson, so I did not want this man to make me look like a fool.
You did. He was on the Jaren Jackson hype train pretty early. I was kind of in the camp that wanted the Grizzlies to draft Marvin Bagley or Luka Doncic. Luka was the one that everybody, I think, kind of was like, if we get him, that's going to be amazing. But outside of that, I was like, Marvin Bagley, that'd be cool. Mm-hmm. That'd be exciting. But anyways. So that's the Grizzlies for you. That's how it's looking right now. A lot of great moves. It seems like at least a lot of great moves right now this offseason. You get two solid draft picks to go along with that. Mike Conley's healthy. He's getting ready for the Team USA stuff right now. Marc Gasol's rescuing refugees out in Spain right now, man. Things are looking good for the Grizzlies as a brand. Things are pretty strong.
Most interesting man in the world, Marc Gasol. You just never know what the heck that guy's going to be doing. You follow him on Instagram. He's posting pictures of his garden.
Yeah, he's planting his tomatoes, man.
And then the next day, he's in the Mediterranean Sea or whatever, rescuing immigrants. So the man is. He's unbelievable, but I guarantee you when he steps back into Memphis, he's going to be ready to play basketball.
He's going to be ready to go, and I think Mark's going to be pretty happy with the direction the franchise is going back to.
One thing, too, I want to say before we wrap up, Mike, we've got the clean bill of health, supposedly. We've seen the video of him jumping and dunking, and, oh, man, he looks good. I was a little bit concerned when I heard that he is not going to really be participating in drills at the Team USA camp. That kind of poked up my antennas a little bit at that one. So I'm curious. I'm curious to hear more developments on Mike's recovery and how he's doing. Because I think everyone was kind of operating under the assumption he's fine. Like, he's going to be ready to go day one. And maybe he is. But it is a little... it makes me pause just a little bit when I see he's not participating in Team USA drill. So I'm curious to see the developments over the next couple of weeks out of that.
Absolutely. It's going to be something we look at closely because Conley is the heart of the team. I mean, you need Mike Conley there along with Gasol, but obviously without Mike, the thing, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's just not the Grizzlies. Chipper, before we go, anything else? Anything else you'd like to say to the people as we wrap up our first podcast ever?
A lot of cautious optimism, I think, should be surrounding the Grizzlies. A lot of optimism surrounding Memphis football. If you're a Memphis football fan, you should be feeling really good. Obviously, if you're a Memphis basketball fan, you should be feeling... It's a good time if you're a sports fan in the Bluff City, man.
It's a good time to follow us on Twitter, at WMCActionNews5. Like us on Facebook, if Facebook's still your thing. WMCActionNews5 there as well. You can find me on Twitter, at SuduUpadhyaya, SuduUpadhyaya. Had to spell it for you. At Chip Williams Jr. You can find Chipper as well for more Grizzlies information. We will be back next Friday. We're going to try to do this every Friday. Until then, see you guys next time.